Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios, with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by Red River Toyota in Wynn, Arkansas, online at redrivertoyota.com. We're back with the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
I needed someone to understand my ups and downs. There you were.
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He's on X at Jeff underscore Calkins. Jeff, it's over. Rest in peace to the Warriors dynasty. I love it. I love it. But also, I don't know if you heard me earlier. It was kind of, weirdly enough, by the end of it, like watching how bad it got in that game and how Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are getting beat up and they're just making mistakes they've never made throughout this crazy run they've had. It kind of got hard to watch for a second. It was a little tough to watch.
I enjoyed every minute of it. Like, that was like some people like, oh, I knew what was going to happen, and so I'll go to bed. I was like, oh, no. I've seen enough of Steph dancing off after hitting shots and Klay talking smack and whatever else. I want to see him suffer. And so I enjoyed every second of that. That was tremendous. It's funny, though, like, It is the end of the dynasty, if you want to say measure it in championships. But then again, last year was too. Like, you know, I don't actually think it means this group will be broken up, so they won't win another title. But they, my own suspicion is that they re-sign Klay, that they let Chris Paul walk, and that next year it's Draymond, Steph, Klay, Steve Kerr, Andrew Wiggins. Like, again, okay, they're not going to win a title, but they'll make the play in again at least. And so they're dead as in terms of a threat to win the title. But, you know, so are the Lakers for that matter, right? It's still fun to watch LeBron, or the Lakers fans like it, and so the Lakers aren't a threat to win the title, but they will keep playing and they'll. Now they're going to at least get in the first round of the playoffs. They're sort of in very similar situations. Both the Lakers and the Warriors exist as a built around aging stars who are still people want to see. So you can't really get rid of them, right? But they're no longer a threat to win the title.
Yeah, and I will say, I don't know if I'm with you on Klay Thompson coming back. I don't know if I'm there. Because, I mean, he's going to have to take a serious pay cut. Is he willing to do that?
I think he can take a pay cut.
We'll see.
Yeah, well,
but I think that he's, like, from what I'm hearing reporting-wise, is that he's ready to at least test the free agency
ready
market.
To test the waters. Well, if someone, I mean, truth of the matter is, like, coming off the bench, he averaged 19 points a game, 40, like, he had a horrible game last night. That was awful, an offer. Like, he was just god-awful, right? But ever since he'd been moved off the bench, he was shot better than 47 from three. I mean, you just saw what Grayson Allen got paid, right?
Yeah.
You know, Grayson Allen's an $18 million player now, right? And Klay is as good as Grayson Allen. So it's possible that someone with money, whether it's Oklahoma City or, I don't, you know, whatever, some team will want to throw money at him. I can't see him wanting to, you know, go to Detroit or the Wizards or somewhere, whatever, some place where they just are going to have money and will not be winning. I can't see that. And my suspicion is maybe his ego won't allow it. But don't you think he'll want to stay and hang out with his buddies on the Bay in the end?
Maybe. Maybe. It's been tumultuous the last few seasons, though, with Draymond. And honestly, you look at, like, the way this season shaped up, they probably would not have been in that play-in game had it not
totally
been for Draymond Green being out for 21 games. And what were they, 13 and 14, something? I forget what the record was. But they were phenomenal when he got back in there down the stretch of the season. But when he was out, they lost a lot of ground.
They were tremendous once he came back. And you're exactly right. And isn't it fitting? His absence is why they were in the play-in. And so, like, just compare it to last year. They actually had a better record this year than last year. And then last year they also lost their first game in the playoffs to Sacramento. But it was a seven-game series. Here it's a one-game series. And so you're done, right? And that is because Draymond cost them by getting himself suspended. I'm going to go ahead and presume they would have been, you know, won a few more games and would have, you know, maybe made it into the actual playoffs rather than the play-in. So I think that's sort of sweet and perfect that his absence, you know, I imagine that he's not sitting with that today. He's not admitting that to himself today. You know, he's not, like, I don't think he probably has enough self-awareness even in his new, you know, even in the wake of that enforced absence, I don't think he has enough self-awareness to realize that he's the one who cost him a real playoff spot, but he did.
Yeah. A lot of people in the Bay are talking about, like, the why the Warriors dynasty's coming to an end. And I sort of agree with them to a certain extent. It felt like, and we talked about this on several occasions, it feels like they never really honed in on trying to play those young players. For God's sakes, this year, Jonathan Kuminga was probably their second best offensive player, and it took till halfway through the season for Jonathan Kuminga to say he's lost trust in Steve Kerr and that franchise for them to actually play him. And Moses Moody is a guy they took early in the draft that they didn't play for a long, long time. And James Wiseman may have just been a miss, and that's fine. But it felt like he never really was brought along at the beginning of his career to have sustained success. Just felt like they never really looked forward. It was Steph, Clay, Dre. If you're not going to get that done with them, it's not really worth it.
Well, I think it's probably difficult. You know, I think when you have won four titles with a group, that there is a certain internal dynamics and that you want to give. I mean, I understand that. You want to give them, if you're Steve Kerr, you want to give them the respect that they've earned until it is no longer possible. And that is really what happened this year. But then they finally moved Clay to the bench. And even then, Clay wasn't happy about it. You know, so listen, I would love the Grizzlies to have those kind of problems. You know,
right.
How do you deal with an aging core that's won four titles? You know, like, how do you deal with them coming to grips with their mortality after winning four titles? And then the truth of the matter is that you could have shifted more to Kuminga. You could have shifted more to Marcus Moody, but they're not that level of player. You know what I mean? Like, it has shifted to them now. Like, Kuminga is getting the run that he earned now. And you know what? They're not Luka. He's not Luka. You know what I mean? You look around and you look at, yes, they have some good young players. They're good young players. Aren't as good as Oklahoma City's good young
right.
players. They're not as good as Minnesota's good young players. They're not as good as the great young player who plays for Dallas. They're not as good as. And so you have a bunch of players who got old, and then you've got a bunch of good young players, but not superstar level players. And they obviously whiffed on Wiseman. They just 100% whiffed on Wiseman.
Yeah. Now, Pelicans, Lakers, that was actually a good game. As much as we like, a lot of people enjoyed watching the Warriors flail around, that was not a good game. But
no.
the Pelicans Lakers was phenomenal. It was actually I was kind of sad to watch Zion go out. He was sensational last night. He was great. And defense, he was phenomenal. It looks like he's not going to be in Friday's game. But one thing I did notice about the Pelicans is as much as people have tried to create the Zion Williamson, oh, they're going to compete for championships at some point, I don't see that with that team. I see that team maybe being a protected seed. I see that team being in the Western Conference playoff picture for years to come. But I don't see them as a championship threat. They don't scare me. They just don't. What about you?
Well, it's a point that Chris Harrington has always made, which is that they have this collection of players that individually seems like, oh, well, that's a good collection of players. Like, Brandon Ingram's a good player, and CJ McCollum's a good player, and Jonas is a good rebounder, and Zion's a good player. And then they have all these young guys, Herb Joneses and Trey Murphys and whatever.
Right.
That's a good collection of players. They don't fit. Yeah. Right? That's the point he's made. Is that, and it's one of the things that distinguishes the Grizzlies' collection of good players from their collection of good players, is that the Grizzlies' players, if they were healthy, you know, Ja, Jaren, Dez, are a perfect fit. Here, these players don't really fit. And honestly, you saw it at the end of the game. Brandon Ingram isn't playing. C.J. McCollum isn't playing. So it was, you know, and Jonas was, like, played off the floor too. So it was, I think it was, it became the Zion show, and then he was tremendous, and then once he gets hurt, over. All the air goes out of the balloon. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know we can debate, and you think Clay may end up with the Warriors. I don't know if I believe that. We'll see how this offseason goes. I don't know if I have any debate about Brandon Ingram. It does not seem like he'll be back with the Pelicans. And we'll see what he does coming up on Friday. But he didn't play in the closing lineups. Like they just
incredible.
They just did not play him. No. That tells the story to me. I don't know about you.
No, it was kind of astonishing who he had out there. I thought it spoke volumes. I mean, can you imagine having the, you know, it would be whatever. It would be like having Jaren or Dez, like one of your guys at the end who's just sitting on the bench when it's winning time. And by the way, you've lost Zion, and you're still not playing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. So,
a 20-point-per-game score, 20.8 this year.
He did not play well.
No, I feel like Connor and I talked about this, like, way back before the season, Team USA times. He has been – there's been this trend down, a really substantial trend down for Brandon Ingram this year. Whether it was Team USA and now with the Pelicans and seeing him not playing closing lineups, it's just been I don't know if the love's there anymore. I don't think the Pelicans seem to like him. I don't know if he likes playing there. There's something amiss.
Well, and it was in the end. And the team that gets lucky here is Oklahoma City, because now it feels like, you know, you're going to have Zion out. And so you have a diminished Sacramento team. And obviously they were very good last night, but you were looking at the possibility that, you know, Oklahoma City might have to play an LA or a Warriors or some experienced team with championship, you know, resume and pedigree. Instead, they'll get a Sacramento team that, you know, they were great last night. Keegan Murray hits the 8 threes, but it looks like a much easier run now for Oklahoma City going forward.
Now, on the Grizzlies front, I did want to point this out. I don't know if you've talked about this as well, but I was pointed in the direction of this stat. Remember when we were talking about the Grizzlies and them making it into the play-in and the pace they'd have to have when they were 6-19 after the first 25 without Ja? You remember those conversations. You realize what the record would have had to have been for the rest of the year?
Well, as it turned out, it was nuts.
40-17? 40-17? That is kind of mind-blowing.
We didn't know it then.
Of course not.
So those that sentiment that, my God, they're making a run. Like, we played Eric's call of the Ja winning shot in his return game. And it ends with Ja saying, I mean, with Eric saying something like, and the Grizzlies serve notice that they're going to make a run, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, we know what happened. But no, so at the time, for about, you know, those 4 or 5 games, it felt real. But you're exactly right. Now, in retrospect, you look back and you realize, no.
It was an impossible pace. Like, if they were 40-17 down the stretch and got into the play-in, they would have been the most terrifying play-in team. Everybody would have been discussing it then.
I mean, you look at it. Like I said, Golden State had a better record this year than last year. They were in the play-in. Sacramento, everyone's like, my God, they had a great year last year. They had a terrible year this year. They won 2 fewer games this year than last year. That's it. Like, basically the same year. They had basically the same year as last year. It's just the West was so stacked that the same record now, you know, has you in the play-in, you know, as opposed to last year. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins. Mississippi State in Memphis and Ole Miss in Memphis. It's going to set up an out-of-conference schedule next year. San Fran at Chase Center. UNLV away. Maui Invitational. Virginia away. Clemson away. Mizzou at home. Mississippi State at home. And Ole Miss at home. It's insane. Like, admittedly, that's wild. I don't even know if they're going to – how much space are they going to have for bye games? like easy wins, the Alabama States of the world, something like that. Feels like they're not going to have any space to actually schedule those things. They will, but
I applaud them. I applaud them for having the regional games. I think that makes a lot of sense. I might mind you, Tennessee and Arkansas would be even more fun.
Connor and I talked about that. Those are your top two wish lists as far as out of conference.
I think it'd be fun to have whatever Kentucky or Duke come in here. That'd be great. Yeah. North Carolina, but in terms of teams that actually
might's a strong word.
Should come in here. It's Tennessee and Arkansas would both be great fun. I'm glad they got it done with Ole Miss and Mississippi State. So that's good. It's a murderous. Well, it's particularly murderous when you're contemplating it with four players. You know what I mean? It looks even more murderous before you know what the roster is, right? Like it looks a little less. Looks like a little more manageable if you know that David Jones is on the team or whatever, right? But right now, you look at this sort of just being assembled roster and that schedule, you know, at Clemson, at Virginia, like that is no picnic. If they can do non-conference this year what they did last year, I'm going to just go ahead and bet that things end better for them.
Yeah, I would say. I just hope they do okay in the conference.
Yeah.
They have to do something in conference, and that's yet to be seen.
It's staggering, though. The idea that they could do that out of conference and then have the woeful conference schedule that they had, that would be a hard thing to repeat. Like, to be that good out of conference and that bad in conference, that's not an easy thing to do. Like the fact that they pulled that they somehow managed to do that shows the level of dysfunction on this team. Of good fortune, honestly, in close wins in some of the non-conference games, but B, then just the level of complete dysfunction on the team.
And another thing that's kind of funny to me, I know that I always talk about, I think it was the golf tournament last year where I brought up the first bracketology of the year where Joe Lunardi, he has his way too early bracketology. Isn't it strange they have four players on the team and he has them as an 11 seed? That blows my mind. That absolutely.
Well, that is to me, when I, remember I asked you.
You said, will they or won't they make the tournament?
I said, will they or won't they? And you did not want to answer that question.
I did not.
It seemed ridiculous. And I said, yeah, I get it. But like, Joe Lunardi has to answer it now. Like this is the you have to put people in or out. This is when he does it, he gets the clicks. And so if you have to answer that question, the question is, would you put them on your bracket? And this was when they had no players as far as I could tell, because I fundamentally have faith in Penny as a recruiter, I said I would put them in the bracket. And so if you're going to put them in the bracket, sure, put them in as 11 seed. That seems about right. Why not? Or put them in as a 9, right? Put them in as a 9.
Yeah. We'll see. They have four guys. I don't even know. I know they're doing visits and they're doing all this, and I guess they have PJ Haggerty.
All you're betting on is pedigree. All you're betting is the name Memphis and Penny Hardaway and his recruiting history, and so you're saying, therefore, I think he's going to end up in the bracket. That's it. It's not based on the roster. Yeah. Because there really is no roster.
Yeah. There's other teams, though, that have more of a roster put together than four guys. But I rest my case.
If you look at the top 25, you can, in fact, it's one of the things that distinguishes them. You'll see, they've got these four starters. They're going to have to get this in the portal, right? They're going to need a point guard in the portal, or they're going to need another wing in the portal, or they're going to need a big man in the portal. But you can project four of the five starters. For anyone who's basically in the top 25, it's why when you put Memphis in your bracket, you don't put them in as a 4 seed or a 6 seed. You put them in as an 11 seed because you're just betting on Penny. That's it.
Yeah. So I was just doing my rounds on social media today, and I came across an interesting clip of Colin Cowherd. We know he's a take artist. We get that. But he was talking about the Team USA basketball roster. I don't know if you heard this. He said it's miserable. He's like, this shows how far we've fallen as a country in basketball. And just so we're clear, we're talking about a team with Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, Devin Booker, Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, Drew Holiday. He was comparing it to the Dream Team, which I think is a losing, like, that's, you can't, come on. Let's be real here. Let's get real here. And he was, like, there was, it was clearly super biased. He went, he said, never been past the second round, Joel Embiid, young Anthony Edwards. He brought up Bam Adebayo. Oh, he's only scored 20 points per game once in his career, comparing him to, like, Charles Barkley. It's like, that's a ridiculous argument. But what do you think of the roster in general?
Well, I hadn't done it. If you match him player for player, I do think the Dream Team's probably better.
Sure, right? Sure. But it's the best. It's the best. Olympic.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Basketball team in the history of the world.
This one's still pretty good. This one's still pretty good. I mean, you've got LeBron, who is, if not the best player, the second best player, or whatever, top three best player in the history of the world, right? So you've got LeBron. I mean, we're just going names here. I don't know where Larry Bird was in his career on the Dream Team. So I'm just saying Larry Bird,
later.
Right? So, yeah, but he was later. It was toward
same
the end
Magic.
For Larry. And it was toward the end for Magic, and it's toward the end for LeBron. But if you're just saying names, they got more.
Yeah.
They do. They got more. That was a great period. And but, you know, you got maybe the best shooter in the history of basketball in Steph. You've got maybe the best scorer, like pure lethal scorer in KD. Like, I don't know. Like, seems to me like LeBron, Steph, and KD, pretty good.
Yes.
You know, that seems pretty good. I get, those are the three best, right? The three, like, all-time greats.
Right.
And so you have to put them up against Jordan, Bird, and Magic. Is that the three best for that team?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jordan, LeBron, people go back and forth on that. I don't know, like, Bird.
Christian Laettner was on that team, I remember, too.
Is Bird better than, is Bird? Bird was great. Is he better than KD?
Not even, no. I'm sorry, he won more.
He's better than
more
KD.
More accomplished, sure.
I don't think he's better than KD.
No.
And so then you got Magic and Steph. Well, I don't know. You know, obviously very different players. I actually think the top three, pretty close, right?
Yeah. I agree. And I just think it's hilarious, the takes that come out. And well, you know, if they lose a game warming up in an exhibition, it's always, you know, the world's catching up. And sure, you know, some of our best players.
I mean, the big difference, honestly, isn't the U.S. players.
Yes,
are,
it's Luka worse. And Jokic.
It's the fact that the best players in the world now.
And Giannis.
Is there Giannis? Yeah, and Jokic, yeah, are the best players in the world now are international players.
Yeah.
I mean, really, right? That is the stunning difference. And that was part of the point of the Dream Team. That, you know what that means? It means this was a success. It means it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Now,
it's not something to bemoan. It's something to celebrate. That's why the Dream
right.
Team was sent to do what it did.
Right. And Connor did point out one of the funniest things about the whole thing. The 12th player that was added was Kawhi Leonard. He gave a he gave an okay to the Olympics to play in Paris, but he has not given an okay to his own team that's going to be playing in a tough series here in just a week. It's great stuff. That's Kawhi. I mean, that is so Kawhi. He is on brand. He is very on brand. I'll give him that. Now, final thing I want to bring up with you, Jontay Porter. He is done.
Yeah.
He is lifetime ban for gambling, and he bet the Raptors to lose. He did it on somebody else's sports book. I mean,
he lost those bets. He lost all the bets where he bet the Raptors to lose.
Well, he traded a potential NBA career for $21,000 too.
Right.
But is this the question here? Is this the most egregious example? Like, we had Pete Rose, we've had other examples. Is this the most egregious though? Betting your team to lose is different. Like, that is.
Wait, didn't he bet his team to lose when he was on the G League team?
I believe so. Yeah, it was between 2021 and 2023.
He did not bet his team to lose in a game in which he participated.
He bet on the team that he's trying to aspire to get to lose. Yeah,
exactly.
Big difference. Huge difference there.
It is actually a difference because you can have an impact on the losing if you are fixing a game, if you're actually playing in it. No, I mean, it's totally egregious. And, of course, he should be banned. 100% he should be banned. I think the interesting question is, how many other people do you think are doing this? I mean, I can't believe he's the only one. Maybe he's the only one who
went to those lengths.
Who is you know, yanking himself out of the game after people have bet $5,000 on the under, you know, minutes or whatever. Like the unders, but that he might be the only person doing that. But like, how many NBA players do you think are betting games, NBA games, through their buddies' accounts?
Probably plenty, but none as stupid as Jonte Porter in this situation.
Clearly none as stupid as Jonte Porter.
Yeah.
Clearly none as stupid as Jonte Porter.
Yeah. And it is interesting to see, like, the conversation around. This is not new, though. The Tim Donaghy thing's not that far removed from that when refs were doing their thing to try to fix games. Like, it's always been – and that was before the proliferation of sports gambling in general. But I agree with you. He's not the only one. He is not the only one.
He is not the only one. He is the dumbest one.
He's the one dumb enough to get caught.
He is the dumbest one. And I obviously this is like a gift. This is what you want if you're Adam Silver, right? Because now you can ban him and you can say and who cares if you ban Jonte Porter, unless you're not a member of the Porter family, and you can set an example, and I think it will, you know, maybe help scare some other people. I think this is, you know, you couldn't have scripted this better if you were Adam Silver.
Yeah, but if it's Anthony Edwards doing it next, that'd be a problem for him. That'd be a big problem.
Then what he'd have? An interpreter. He'd have an interpreter. Anthony Edwards.
That he could blame it on. Yeah.
He's an interpreter, right.
Yeah, he'd stop speaking English. Find an interpreter. Okay, all right. I understand. Well, Jeff, I appreciate it, man.
Thanks.
That's Jeff Calkins, @Jeff_Calkins on X, Daily Memphian columnist, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show, right here, 9 to 11, 92.9 FM, ESPN, an interpreter, Anthony Edwards interpreter.
That's pretty beautiful. Damn good by Jeff.
That's beautiful.
Pretty good.
Well done. Now, know what else is well done? Everything that you can go find over at Oxbow. 964 June Road is where you can find Oxbow. Family owned and operated for a decade plus. They've been serving you. You go in there. It's a two-story storefront off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco station, and it is beautiful, and they have a selection of everything you could possibly imagine. You'll be met by a kind, courteous staff. You'll be met by Earl the dog. You pat him on the head, and you say, hey, Gabe sent you, and they will help you find whatever you need to find. And what can you find? Clothing, the best clothing. Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen, and Main. They have the best brands, and they have the best teams. Any team that you want to find, you can find. Grizzlies, Tigers, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, you name it. They have it over at 964 June Road, off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco station. But they also have vintage vinyl for music lovers. They have hunting and outdoor essentials. They have sports memorabilia. And you can even find some things if you go to the Grove or go to Tiger Lane. You can find your tailgating gear, cups, coolers, koozies. They have it, tumblers, whatever you want is over at 964 June Road. And you can do it all online as well if you don't want to go to 964 June Road. Go to shopoxbow.com. And when you go to fill up that shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, there's going to be a spot to put in a promo code. Use my promo code, TheGabeShow, all caps, no spaces, TheGabeShow. And you'll get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. But regardless, if you're going online or in store, remember to shop local. Shop Oxbow. Now, we need to get to our showboats guest. Jerry Elder is a safety. He had 7 tackles last week, comes from a very small school, Westchester University in Pennsylvania. But we will talk to Jerry Elder, safety for the showboats next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Your Memphis Showboats are 1-2 on the season. Couple of losses in a row, but a get-right game coming up this weekend in St. Louis at the Dome at America's Center on ABC, 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, like I said. So we bring on a guy who had 7 tackles last week in the loss, but Jerry Elder joins right now. He's a safety for the Memphis Showboats. He's on X at Jarae Elder 21. Jarae, what's happening, man? How are you?
I'm good. Appreciate you having me on the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. What's your schedule, though, right now? I mean, you had a Wednesday practice, and then with the Saturday game, you have some Saturday, some Sunday. How does that work for a Saturday game?
Saturday game, so we had the Tuesday, Wednesday practice and Thursday as well. Friday is our travel day right now because, as you guys know, we're all down here in right. Texas, and then we travel to whatever city we're playing in. So Friday is our travel day, so Thursday just clean everything up and get ready for the show.
Yeah, I have I've asked a couple of guys that have come on the show every single Wednesday about that sort of how it's working. You're in Arlington, you're with a couple of guys, rooming with them. How has that been? Obviously, I think everybody wants to be in the town that they're playing in, but how has the travel schedule been? Has it been sort of a burden, or has it been okay?
It's been okay. Obviously, it'd be great to be in Memphis the whole season and get to engage with our community and to do everything we can to get fans out to games and everything like that, and just spend time doing community service events and stuff would be huge, and it'd be a lot of fun for us being in Memphis. But with us being here, we still are able to get out in the community and do everything that we can. The league does a good job of making transitions smooth for us and time in and sharing fields and stuff. So I'd say the league has been doing a good job, and most of it's not in our hands as a player. You got to right. just show up where you need to show up once the clock hits that time and just get to work.
Yep, I hear you. Now, when I was looking for background on you, I got to be honest. I did not know. I am not familiar with Westchester University. I just had you're from Pennsylvania. It's in southeastern Pennsylvania. I'd imagine it's from your hometown. I don't know how far it is. You could probably enlighten me on that. But tell me about that. You, four-year player at Westchester D2.
Yes, sir. So Westchester is about an hour and a half. Well, about an hour to an hour and a half from where I grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I played there for four and a half years because I redshirted my first okay. year there. But my brother was already there, enrolled at school and on the football team as well. And he was a standout running back for Westchester. I kind of just trying to follow in his footsteps the best way I could. But yeah, we're a D2 school. We're really good. Have good winning seasons every year. We won the conference title my junior year with another guy that he plays for the DC Defenders, Nadir Rouse. He's a DB for them as well. So we had a couple good runs. We were in the national playoffs every year when I was in college, except for one. So a couple good runs, a lot of good teams and players and great staff all those years under Bill Zwan and learning from guys like Gerald Tony. So yeah. It was a cool experience.
Now, what conference is that, curiously?
The PSAC.
Okay.
PSAC.
Okay. Yeah. What does that say? Do you know exactly what that stands for?
Yeah, it's the Pennsylvania State Athletic okay. Conference. A lot of, like, there's guys on our side. So the eastern side of the conference is Westchester, obviously, and then you have Kutztown, Bloomsburg, Shippensburg, and then the west side of the conference,
okay.
there's Slippery Rock, IUP, schools like Gannon and everything. So, yeah, it's a good conference.
Good conference,
one of the best
for sure.
in Division II.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Slippery Rock and Kutztown and Shippensburg. I know that they say, you know, whether it's, you know, for pro football, they'll find you where you're at. It seems like that conference, I mean, I see those names a lot, whether it's NFL or with the UFL. It feels like there's a decent amount of guys that get out of that conference and end up playing professional football.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like in the Northeast, there isn't as many Division I schools as there are in the South. So you have a lot of guys that may be fringe Division I players, lower-level Division I players that don't necessarily get an offer or don't get a shot. And then they end up at these D2 and sometimes even D3 schools. And yeah, you end up seeing after a couple of years, like, all right, they probably did have D1 talent, but the opportunity didn't work out. And then they come in and scouts come in and they notice it. Everybody's role is different. And some scouts come into some schools, some don't. It's just about getting to a pro day or going and play wherever you need to play to get that look and get that shot. And everybody's role is different. You just got to keep going.
What was that recruiting process like for you as far as offers and everything else? Was that one of your only offers, or do you have other things that you were looking at?
I struggled academically in high school.
Okay.
So that was kind of one of the things, that was the biggest thing that held me back. My first offer was from Albany.
Okay.
And all my offers were for receiver, actually. My first offer was from Albany, then UNH. And then I got a later one from St. Francis and a PWO for Temple. And then when I couldn't get into school, it kind of was the JUCO or prep school route. And things could have looked different if I went prep school, sure. But I kind of always told my family and my brother, if I was going to go play D2 ball, I would go play with him And so that's the route that I took, and I think that's one of the best decisions I ever made in my life.
Yeah, so wide receiver to safety now. When did you make that transition? I'm assuming you made it right when you got on campus?
Once I got to campus, actually, I came in as a corner because that's what I predominantly played at in high school on the defensive side. And, Gerald Toney just felt like it'd be better for me to be playing with him, and because he's a safety coach, he felt like it'd be better for me playing with him at the safety spot. So that's where he decided to move me to, and it kind of took over itself. And just having that receiver background and bringing that to the defensive side of the ball has helped me a lot.
Does that help a lot, just to know like some of the tendencies and the footwork, and you know, being able to cover those guys and understand what routes they're going to run? Did it help to have that wide receiver experience to like understand what they're running at you?
Yeah, absolutely. Understanding route concepts, understanding when a receiver is shutting his hips down, and going in and attacking the ball, understanding break points, where they're like following the quarterback's eyes, and now you, at that point, you're just becoming the receiver. You're getting back to running the route and going to get it. That's the biggest thing. A lot of people will make jokes and say DBs don't really have hands.
Right.
In my defense, DBs are just better more athletic versions of receivers. So, but we got to do everything they're doing, but we do it backwards. So. Yeah.
You know, it's a tougher job, too. I got to say, it's a tougher job. I mean, you guys, yeah. I mean, when it comes to, like, the rules and everything and how they're shifting, how tough is that? Like, with you know, your strike zone and everything else. Like, is that – do you have to think about that on the fly these days?
Me, personally, I don't.
Okay.
Obviously, there's no, like, I'm out there trying to hurt somebody and –
right.
Yeah, you want to protect yourself, but at the end of the day, you got to play football. The more you're out there thinking, is a higher chance of getting hurt or being wrong and doing the wrong thing. So just kind of go out there and play football. But being professional, obviously not being able to make contact with the receiver after 5 yards, it's a battle. It's definitely tough. It's not an easy thing, but that's just, we're professionals for a reason, right? Like, we have to be really good at our craft and use our feet, because that's a huge thing that got us here. So just learning the rules, understanding the rules, and getting better each offseason. Like, that's why offseasons are such a huge thing, because you might not do as much technique stuff when you're in season, but when you're not offseason, you got to be the best technician you can be.
Yeah, talking with Showboat safety Jarae Elder. Now, after you got done at Westchester, what was the road, man? Obviously, you were definitely going after professional football. What was the road to get you to the Memphis Showboats?
Yeah, my senior year, I was fortunate to have a lot of scouts come in to come see me. And more than half of the NFL scouts came to see me, a couple of CFL scouts. And, you start thinking everything's just going to go well. Weeks leading up to the draft, my phone is ringing off the hook. I'm sitting around, like, spending time with family and everything, and my phone's ringing. So you start thinking, like, all right, I'm going somewhere, even if it's undrafted. And I had a private workout with the Bucks. They flew into my school to work me out, and that same day the league had shut down because of COVID and everything. So, yeah, once the draft happened, the last day of the draft, the Rams called me that morning, and they asked me if I signed with anybody yet. And I was like, no, I haven't signed with anybody. And they were like, okay, we'll call you if anything changes, and they hung up. And that was the last thing I heard from
NFL. Never heard from that guy again?
Yeah, never. It was the last thing I heard from an NFL team. So it was back to the drawing board. I had a son that was going to be born. And his due date was April. So I had a son that was going to be born. So I was like, all right, well, I got to go make money and so I can take care of family of my own. So I actually went and was working in a warehouse from August till about, I think I lasted to maybe December or January. And I was like, I got to get back to the field.
But were you always training during that process?
Yeah, yeah. I never really stopped. I couldn't.
Yeah.
It was still in my heart and I needed it as a big part of me. So, yeah, so I was getting – there's teams out in Europe that are reaching out to me about coming over and play, and I decided to take the opportunity to go play for in Milan for the Siemens.
Okay.
And, yeah.
How was that?
I was out there.
That seems cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Then it was a great team, great organization, and met a lot of guys, got to see a lot of things over in Italy. But after two games, I was selected in the Spring League to come play for the Blues for Ted Cottrell down in Houston. So, unfortunately, I had to leave the team. So, I came back home, played down in Houston in the Spring League for 6 games. I actually went back to Italy, played in the championship there. We ended up losing the championship in overtime. Played in championship there. And I came back home and got into coaching. Just stay around the football, stay around ball, train, and just to keep getting better at the the mental side of the game, mental aspect of it. And then after a year, you start hearing rumors about the USFL. And fortunately, I was drafted in the supplemental draft the first year of the USFL. And things have just kind of been growing from there, just looking to get better every season I'm here.
So were you the New Orleans Breakers previously?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, yep. Just going through that story, it's you're in Pennsylvania, you stay there for a long time, you really play locally because that most of your conference is in Pennsylvania, then you go warehouse job, you have a coaching job, you're in Italy, you're in New Orleans, you're in Arlington, now you play for Memphis. Like, I don't think people understand. In full disclosure, I played at the University of Memphis, tried to do the pro thing. I was with the AAF and then got cut. If you remember the Alliance of American Football, you were probably still in college at that point. But yep. it's a stressful life, man. It can eat you up if you let it.
Yeah, definitely. There's mental battles every day with everything. I think in the most simplest way, and some people might say it's corny, but in the most simplest way, just waking up in the morning is the best gift that you can have.
Right.
And everything that comes after that is just stuff that you have to deal with. So, I mean, there were days I'll never not tell the truth about it. There were days that it sucked. For lack of better words, just not knowing when the next opportunity was going to come or when I have a chance to play again, especially when you have that fire and that passion in you. I'm sure that you went through the same thing. So just staying down and staying true to yourself is the biggest thing that I had to learn and just be exactly where my feet are at. When my feet are in the warehouse working and I'm making money to provide for my family, I need to be there and be present. When I'm home with my family, I need to be there and be present. When I'm at the field working out, training to get better, I need to treat it like a game rep. So when that game rep does come, I'm ready for it. And just continue to just double down and stay true to myself is a big thing for me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you made it to Memphis and play for the Showboats. And good luck this weekend, man. Appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. That was Memphis Showboat safety, Jarray Elder. He's on X at Jarray Elder 21. That is a hell of a story. Going over to Milan in Italy. Yeah, I mean, the lengths that you can go chase that dream and to land in the UFL in this situation, it looks like the ratings are up too. Ratings are up 46% from the last time they played last year. It's good stuff, man. And thanks to Jarray for giving us a little bit of time. Now, there is more than one way to sell your home. I need to tell you that. You could go through a realtor and they can handle everything, or you could use the FSBO process with Community FSBO, the next-gen FSBO process. FSBO stands for Sale by Owner. They give you the tools to make yourself your own boss when it comes to selling your home. They have three separate packages that let you take advantage of that next-gen FSBO process. You pick your package, they handle everything, professional photography, interactive 3D walkthrough, floor plans, room measurements, and, of course, listing. That's where you're going to save a lot of money. Then you'll field offers, get the contract, and you're on your way. And the money savings are really phenomenal. Using a 2,000-square-foot home selling for $350,000 at a 3% realtor listing fee of $10,500, you can save up to $9,800. And if you have more value in your home and you're selling it for more, you can save even more on that listing fee. So if you're looking to sell your home, look into Community FSBO and the FSBO process. It's an unreal next-gen process that you are sure to latch on to. You can check them out at communityfsbo.com. That's communityfsbo.com, or call them at 901-660-FSBO. That's 901-660-3726. Now we need to go ahead and get to small talk and talk a little Jonte Porter. You got a lifetime ban from the NBA for gambling. I'll give you the details next.
LoveMemphis.com.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. It's over for Jonte Porter. NBA Communications released a statement earlier today, and they said the NBA announced today, that Jonte Porter, a two-way player recently under contract with the Toronto Raptors, has been banned from the NBA. League investigation found that Porter violated league rules by disclosing confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes and betting on NBA games. Apparently, in a March 20th game, Porter disclosed confidential information about his own health status to an individual he knew to be an NBA bettor. That person then subsequently placed an $80,000 parlay prop bet to win $1.1 million on that March 20th game. In all, it looks like he wagered a fair amount and ended up making $21,965, Jonte Porter did. The biggest issue, though, is the fact that he did bet when he was with the G League affiliate of the Toronto Raptors. He bet on the Raptors to lose. And there was 13 separate NBA bets that he got caught placing, the largest of which being about $21,000. But he got caught for 13 of those, and he placed them on a friend's account. This is substantial. It's the most egregious I've ever seen from a player. And I understand the proliferation of sports gambling. Yeah, you should feel bad for some of these players, but Jontay Porter went above and beyond anything I really thought would be the case for him. But he's banned for life. And really, when you break down the numbers, he made $2.3 million playing basketball, and he threw that away to make $21,965 sports betting. It's just embarrassing, and it really casts a shadow over the NBA. Jontay Porter, the Porter family, Michael Porter Jr. plays for the damn Denver Nuggets. I'm amazed. I figured something would come out of this. People don't just bet and make a whole bunch of money on unders for Jontay Porter's three balls. Like, I figured that we were headed this direction. But to see the details get as grimy as they have, it's insane. It's insane. That's all I can say about it.
It's unbelievably stupid. That's the easiest thing I can say. It's just so stupid. Throwing away an NBA career.
A potential NBA.
Potential NBA career. Yeah. Oh, he would have at least been on a roster.
He was with the Grizzlies for a while. He was a two-way guy.
Threw it away for $21,000. Dumb.
And then got caught easily.
Easily.
He had a Discord channel that he charged $50 a person to put his bets out on.
My eye hurts.
Dumb. Really dumb. But we have a third hour on the way, and we're going to start it by talking some NBA with Eric Hasenstein, the radio voice of the Grizzlies. He's next.